This is the introduction for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 11th, 2020. We begin on the front page under the Higher Education heading. Milliken names Reynolds president, head of Ohio school to succeed White. This article is by Donette Beckett from Decatur. The newly named 16th president of Milliken University is a Decatur native who sees many opportunities to strengthen the relationship between the city and university. James M. Reynolds will take office July 1st, the university's Board of Trustees announced Monday. He will replace Patrick White, who was elected president in October 2013. Reynolds, 62, has been president of Wilmington College in Wilmington, Ohio, since 2012. In a phone interview Monday afternoon, he said he had met with Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, Macon County Sheriff Tony Brown, and other community leaders to discuss how the university, students, and public can work together. A job description for the position said the new president would be expected to increase cooperation between Milliken and the community. There are so many wonderful opportunities where Milliken would benefit and can serve Decatur, said Reynolds, who described growing up six blocks from the campus after his family moved to the area in 1961. He said he hopes to explore partnerships with others as well. But you have to be creative and dream a little bit on how they can work together, Reynolds said. There are possibilities for the success of Milliken and the city. Reynolds has a Bachelor of Arts degree in biology from Drake University and a Master of Arts in zoology from DePaul University. He earned his PhD in biology from Illinois State. Reynolds and his wife, Sue, have two daughters. Reynolds went to Wilmington College in 2007 as Vice President for Academic Affairs and Dean of the Faculty. The college has an enrollment of about 1,230 students. Its main campus is southwest of Columbus, Ohio, with a secondary one in Cincinnati. He was Academic Vice President and Dean of the Faculty at Midland Lutheran College in Fremont, Nebraska, from 2003 through 2006. Randall Blackburn, chairman of the Milliken's Board of Trustees, said Reynolds' experience as a university president appealed to the board. It's a lot of experience, he said, especially combined with his success in fundraising, enrollment, and alumni engagement. Blackburn said the university received 60 applicants for the position. The board met with 8 candidates off campus in Chicago before interviewing inviting 5 to Decatur. Of those, 2 received job offers at other institutions, and 1 withdrew before arriving on campus. The search committee consisted of alumni, a cabinet member, a student, and faculty. Blackburn also stressed the strong relationship between Milliken and the Decatur community. The bond is really important for both entities, he said. It's more than speech giving and talking to the mayor. Reynolds said the top job at Milliken was appealing for multiple reasons. I love what they do and who they serve, he said. He praised one of Milliken's key features, performance learning, which gets students out of the classroom and into hands-on activities to practice what they've learned. And about 35% of the students are first-generation students, Reynolds said. And that's me. I understand this group of students. Reynolds said his father managed 2 Kroger stores, first in Brentwood Village, then the Fairview Plaza store. After Reynolds and his brother began attending grade school, their mother went back to work at the Social Security office. The development for a new strategic plan was also part of the job description. Reynolds said he is familiar with the process. It's a matter of developing a process where all voices are heard, not just those in the college, but others, alumni, townspeople, he said. I've organized plenty of opportunities, given all groups a chance to contribute. The private university has about 2,000 students on 75 acres in Decatur. It was founded by Decatur banker James Milliken in 1901 and sought to embrace the practical side of learning, along with the literary and classical, according to the school. A key feature is performance learning, which gets students out of the classroom and into hands-on activities to practice what they've learned. White's tenure was marked by growth in campus facilities and academic and athletic programs. Projects include the Transform MU Capital Campaign, the Workman Family Softball Field, Workman Family Baseball Field, and Center for Theater and Dance under construction. The $31 million, 87,000 square foot University Commons project also opened during White's presidency. Dr. White did a good job and brought a lot of experience to Millikan, Blackburn said. He's similar to Dr. Reynolds. He's engaged with students and alums. White came to Millikan in July 2013 as interim president, having served 7 years as president of Wabash College in Crawfordsville, Indiana. His contract was extended in spring 2016. White announced his retirement in February 2019. He previously held positions at St. Mary's College in Indiana, Westmark College in Lamars, Iowa, and Pfeiffer College in Meisenheimer, North Carolina. The 29-member Millikan Board of Trustees approved a search committee, which hired the company, AGB Search, and had community outreach to get feedback about the next president. Campus interviews with finalists were scheduled to take place in late January, according to a timeline on the Millikan website. In addition to the strategic plan and community relationships, the 13-page description of the position and the university on the AGB website said the new president will be expected to focus on the following areas: to develop a strategic enrollment management plan, to prepare the university for a successful capital initiative, to continue to promote and strengthen performance learning, to align budgetary resources with institutional priorities. In an interview with the Herald and Review in the fall about his departure, White said, "We have the confidence that we are moving forward with great momentum. Our best days are ahead of us. We have enormous opportunities, and we're not just blue-skying these, but actually accomplishing change and growth on our campus when many other institutions are struggling to think about who they are and what they should be. Millikan is moving forward." Millikan recently welcomed its largest number of new traditional students for a spring semester in school history, a 5.3% increase. And the sidebar here says about James Reynolds, new role, Millikan University's 16th president, current position, president of Wilmington College in Wilmington, Ohio, age 62, Bachelor of Arts in Biology from Drake University, Master of Arts in Zoology from DePaul University, and PhD in Biology from Illinois State University, family, wife, Sue, and two daughters. Still in education, we move on to Keeping the Beat. Argenta Oriana students learn about healthy hearts. This article is by Valerie Wells from Oriana. Emily Castelli's cheeks were pink and she was breathing faster after a go-round in one of two bounce houses in the gym at Argenta Oriana Elementary School. Emily and the other students at the school have spent recent weeks raising money for the American Heart Association through the Kids Heart Challenge, formerly known as Jump Rope for Heart. "The focus has changed," said physical education teacher Gwen Jones, "to focus on whole body wellness and activities that appeal to a wider range of ages." "When you think of jumping rope, you tend to think of elementary age kids," Jones said. "Now the challenge includes any activity that raises the heart rate. So students at Argenta Oriana played basketball, four square in the air, danced, bounced in the bounce houses, and enjoyed snow cones. And yes, they jumped rope. My afternoon classes have been jumping rope and my morning classes have been playing basketball," Jones said. "The American Heart Association is just encouraging any heart-healthy activity. The culminating event of the whole thing is this. It's kind of a relaxed time to celebrate." Jones spent some of her class time during January teaching the kids about hearts and healthy habits, and that not everyone's heart is healthy, but because the students are so young, she couldn't go into as much detail as she might have otherwise. They learn about different heart issues that kids are born with, or that they've developed over time, and what the American Heart Association does and where the money goes, Jones said. Most of the youngsters have t-shirts that read, "I Heart Saving Many." While they were collecting donations, they set up online donation sites through the Kids Heart Challenge, where family and friends could donate, said fifth grader Holly Rood. The website on Monday registered total donations of $3,721, raised by 66 team members. Emily liked the bounce houses best, while Holly liked the basketball and foursquare in the air, which is a game played under a PVC pipe frame, and both of them liked the fact that they had a boombox and music. It would be boring without music, Holly said. Some photos here, some really great ones. Second grader Brooklyn Black enjoys a flavored shaved ice during the Kids Heart Challenge at Argenta Oriana Elementary School. She's wearing a bright pink shirt and looks like eating light blue, aqua blue shaved ice, and she has a big smile on her face. Second grader Daniel Rice shoots some hoops last week during the Kids Heart Challenge at Argenta Oriana. Really great shot of Daniel, both hands in the air, ball just above his head, heading toward the hoop. He's in a red shirt, and his head's leaned back, and he's watching the ball go up. And in the background, a couple of students, girl in a pink shirt, boy in a red shirt, they are also watching the ball go up. And in the very background, very out of focus, the bounce house with many students in it. Looks like a fun, fun time there. And we move on to Decatur Government Council explores TIF district creation, revitalization of neighborhoods, annexation discussed. This article is by Annalisa Trofimuk from Decatur. City leaders this year could create a new tax increment financing district, an economic development tool for improving blighted areas that might not see investments otherwise. The new broad area TIF district was among several steps toward neighborhood revitalization discussed during a study session Monday, when Decatur City Council members also agreed to move forward annexations. City Manager Scott Wrighton said the city staff had been working on neighborhood revitalization strategies developed by the council and community during study sessions last year. The proposed new TIF district would encompass much of the inner city, touting the existing Grand Avenue, Near North, and Old Town redevelopment areas. TIFs are best utilized when there are organic property value increases across the board, even without new investments, Wrighton said in a memo. TIF districts were established by state law as a tool that local governments can use to create economic growth in certain areas. The city has seven: Southeast Plaza, Old Town, Near North, Wabash Crossing, Eastgate Commons, The Pines, Grand Avenue, and Southside. The property value at the time a TIF district is established is considered its base amount. The city, school district, and other entities would continue to collect property taxes based on this amount. When property owners make improvements, they pay higher taxes. However, the proceeds, taxes paid on the difference or increment, are put into a special fund. This money can be used either to reimburse a developer for certain costs or to invest in infrastructure for the area, as the city of Decatur did for its downtown several years ago. The city has taken a pay-as-you-go approach for most TIF incentive agreements in the past, Wrighton said. With council approval, that approach would continue, he said. The Old Town TIF district, which encompasses the downtown area and stretches west toward Millikan University, is currently underwater, Wrighton said. The city could choose to merge it with another contiguous district so that work could continue. TIF districts expire after 23 years. Councilman Bill Faber mentioned federal and state programs that could serve a similar purpose to TIF districts. The TIF is being proposed as a spark for development. There are a couple of other tools that are used to spark development, Faber said. One is opportunity zones and the other is enterprise zones. Faber also mentioned that the city has not always had good experience with TIFs. We are dealing with a very dismal track record for TIFs in our community, and we are being asked now to consider a very large one, Faber said. Deputy City Manager John Kindseth said, while those are options for development, the city has more control over TIF districts. Speaking during the public comment portion of the meeting, resident John Phillips Jr. said he was not in favor of the measure. The TIF process arguably leads to favoritism for politically connected developers, implementing attorneys, economic development officials, and others involved in this process, he said. Also, during the study session, council members discussed the city's growing list of dilapidated properties that are deemed unfit for human habitation. Wrighton asked council members to consider changing some of the language that could speed the process of tearing down some decaying properties. Under the proposed measure, the city would be able to accept applications for voluntary demolition, meaning property owners could agree for the city to pay to tear down the unsafe structures. The city typically attempts to recoup its costs through a legal process that includes placing a lien on the property, but would not do so in the case of voluntary demolitions. If an application is approved, the city would demolish the property in accordance with current standards for site clearing. The Herald and Review highlighted the issue of vacant properties in a two-part series in August, reporting that nearly 200 homes were on the city's demolition list and some had been identified as unsafe as far back as 2012. Neighbors say the vacant houses pose a public safety threat, attracting criminal behavior and wildlife, and have hurt their property values and quality of life. Nearly a quarter of the homes on the list belong to out-of-state owners, such as Daniel Van Gaskin, who owns nearly 50 properties in Decatur, with 15 of them on the demolition list. City attorneys struggled for months to serve Van Gaskin, who lives in Washington, with a summons to appear in court. "We don't want to be taken advantage of, but if they do walk away from the property, we have to go through all this rigmarole that costs us thousands of dollars more per lot," Wrighton said. Some council members expressed reservations about the changes, but informally agreed to give them a try. The city could also consider, later this year, a side lot program that allows for property owners to purchase land adjacent to their lots. Speaking after the meeting, Kindseth said the program allows for homeowners to raise the overall value of the properties. Homeowners could expand their yard or do a number of things with the right property, he said. Wrighton said property owners could add a permanent garage, however, that cannot be sold separately from their original lot. Also, during the study session, the City Council reviewed the roughly 200 annexations that occurred in 2019 in preparation for the upcoming U.S. Census. Wrighton proposed that the city continue to move forward with annexations so that properties that are contiguous with city limits or are under a prior water agreement become part of the city. Let's see here. Sidebar, TIF districts beginning and end dates. This is interesting. Southeast Plaza, May 5th, 1997 through May 5th, 2020. Old Town, May 5th, 2000 to May 15th, 2023. Near North, November 3rd, 2003, November 3rd, 2026. Eastgate Commons, August 7th, 2006, August 7th, 2029. The Pines, February 16th, 2010 through February 16th, 2033. Grand Avenue, May 6, 2013 through May 6, 2036. Southside, July 1st, 2013 through July 1st, 2036. And the source is the City of Decatur. And we move on to page A3, which is the local and state section to deny drug and weapons charges. Police say suspects have links to gangs. Articles by Tony Reed from Decatur. A Decatur man who police say is associated with a street gang that is a law enforcement priority appeared in court pleading not guilty to multiple weapons and drugs charges. Tamaji I. Adams, 18, is being held in the Macon County Jail with bail set at $250,000, which means he must post $25,000 to bond out. Adams and a 20-year-old man, Brian C. McGee, who earlier pleaded not guilty to firearm offenses, were among several people arrested January 15th when the Decatur Police Crimes Unit raided a home in the 200 block of East Olive Street. A sworn affidavit said 10 people were found in the house and had been identified by detectives as involved, associated with a gang called Jump Out. This group has been suspected in recent shootings in the Decatur area and are known to possess weapons, said the affidavit. Talking to the Herald and Review for a Sunday story. Looking back at 2019 crime statistics, Decatur Police Chief Jim Getz said violence and shootings were linked to jump out. "We're coming after them," Getz had said. "They are a nemesis to the safety of our citizens." Adams appeared in Macon County Circuit Court Wednesday, where he faced 3 preliminary hearings in a row. They included the January 15th arrest, where Detective Jason Hess said police found him hiding in a closet with $580 in cash in his pockets and a bag on the floor holding 5 small packages of cocaine. Judge Phoebe Bowers found probable cause to try him on a charge of drug possession, and in two preceding preliminary hearings, she found probable cause to try him on various weapons charges. The first dates to September 29th, when police officer Christopher Scalon said a police patrol saw him acting suspiciously and trying to duck out of sight in the 1400 block of East Wellington Way. Police recovered a fully loaded handgun hidden in some bushes where he had been standing, and Adams is charged with aggravated unlawful use of a weapon and unlawful possession of a gun. Less than 2 months later, on the night of November 4th, police officer James Weddle told the court that Adams had been riding in the back seat of a car pulled over at the intersection of South and West Drives. A loaded 9mm handgun was found tucked under the seat cushion where Adams was sitting, and he was charged with aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. McGee had appeared in court January 29th and waived a preliminary hearing before denying charges of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon and unlawful possession of a handgun linked to the January 15th house raid. A sworn statement from Hess said police had found McGee in possession of a loaded 9mm handgun that had been reported stolen. McGee also remains in custody in the Macon County Jail with bail set at $250,000. Both McGee and Adams are scheduled back in court for preliminary hearings March 10th. Police: woman awoke to being stabbed. Victim's son faces preliminary charge of attempted murder. Tony Reed, Decatur. A sworn Decatur Police Department affidavit filed Monday provided new details in the case against Tracy T. Cunningham, the 28-year-old man facing a preliminary charge of attempted murder for trying to stab his mother to death. The affidavit quotes the 45-year-old mother as saying she had been asleep at 8:30 a.m. Saturday when the alleged attack commenced. She stated she was awoken by her son, Tracy Cunningham, stabbing her in the right ear with a butcher knife, said Officer Jeffrey Klebe in the affidavit. Brown stated that when she awoke, Cunningham stabbed her again in the right wrist, and she heard him saying, "expletive, expletive." Klebe said the mother began screaming that she'd been stabbed, and her cries awakened a male friend who protected her by chasing Cunningham out of the house. The friend is quoted as telling police he woke up in time to see Cunningham holding the weapon and is still trying to stab his mother with it. Interviewed by Klebe, the victim said she didn't know why her son would want to kill her, but she also said he deals with mental illness, including schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. A check of Macon County jail records Monday showed Cunningham was being held in custody in lieu of making bail set at $250,000, which means he must post $25,000 to bond out. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Police arrest man on parole found to have firearms. Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Police arrested a parole Decatur man on multiple weapons charges after chasing him down following an attempted traffic stop, according to court documents. In a sworn affidavit, police said the incident began shortly after 12:30 a.m. Friday near El Dorado Street and Calhoun Street, where officers attempted to stop a Dodge Caravan. Police ended the chase after the vehicle failed to stop, but were told by a witness in the area where the vehicle was last seen that an unknown passenger had gotten out and took off running in the 1200 block of East Hickory Street. Police found a 22-year-old man running in the 1200 block of East Walnut, eventually escorting him to his nearby residence. There, they searched the house and found a number of firearms, including multiple handguns and rifles, as well as boxes of live ammunition, the affidavit said. The affidavit said the man told police he wanted an attorney, but did state that the other 3 people at the residence during the search did not have anything to do with what went on in the house. He was booked into Macon County Jail, where he remained Monday afternoon without bond. He faces preliminary charges of possession of a firearm with a defaced serial number, aggravated possession of 6 to 10 stolen firearms, and unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney. Police: man beaten in alleyway for less than $2. Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Police say a homeless man was beaten and robbed in an alley Sunday evening. Sergeant Chris Copeland said officers were sent to the 900 block of West El Dorado Street around 5:51 p.m. regarding a robbery that had occurred in the alleyway between West King and Green Streets. The 29-year-old victim told police he met up with some acquaintances who had been drinking. One of them asked if he had money for more alcohol. After he refused, two of them became aggressive, shoving him down and proceeding to punch and kick him while on the ground. Copeland said the victim suffered a bloody nose. Police said the suspects took no more than a dollar and some change, as well as a sandwich, Gatorade, and a bag of Cheetos. The men were described as black males, ages 25 to 30, both standing around 5'7 and weighing 140 pounds. One was dressed in gray sweatpants, and the other one wore a red stocking cap, according to police. The incident is under investigation by the Decatur Police Department. And a really great picture here. The Gift of Life. The Reverend Rocky Woolery gives blood with the help of Collection Specialist 2, Andrew Gaddy, on Monday at Mount Zion Christian Church during the annual Mount Zion Ministerial Alliance Blood Drive hosted by Community Blood Services of Illinois. Woolery has been giving blood for the past 32 years. Giving blood is something that is always in need and doesn't take much work from me, he said. Looks like a very nice day there, giving blood. Decatur filling census positions. Annalisa Trofimik, Decatur. The city is looking for workers to go door-to-door counting residents for the U.S. Census. A recruiting event is planned. It is important that we get people involved and get a correct count, said Tim Dudley, the city's economic development coordinator. There is a lot to lose if we don't. Federal funding, a Congress seat, the population count determines those things. The event is 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Friday at the Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. City and county leaders formed a committee last month to create a plan for the census. It includes advertising in high-traffic areas such as the Civic Center and Decatur Public Library. The census, every decade, determines how federal funding is divided and how many U.S. House seats each state gets. The issue is especially important for Illinois, which has had population numbers steadily decline. Macon County has 105,801 residents, according to a U.S. Census Bureau estimate, and had 110,768 in the 2010 census. Decatur has 72,174, down from the 76,122 in 2010. Decatur annexed roughly 200 properties to increase the population by the start of 2020. Employees need to be at least 18 years old and a U.S. citizen. No degree is required. Dudley said the hours are flexible and those who are hired can work in the neighborhood of their choice. This does not affect government benefits like SNAP, TEMF, or Medicaid, Dudley said. Hours are full or part-time. They pay $20 an hour. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 11th, 2020.